All right, it's Friday on The Fan pregame. Justin Cuthbert and Ben Ennis today. We will get to the Toronto Blue Jays trade. Jimmy Garcia going to the Seattle Mariners. But it rained on the parade or the opening ceremonies for the Paris 2024 Olympics. But the dark cloud hanging over Canada soccer is where we begin. The latest on the timeline since the two Canadian staffers were sent home for flying a drone over New Zealand's practice goes as such. Canada beats New Zealand 2-1. That's great. Report of rampant use of drones across Soccer Canada or Canada Soccer from last night. Priestman sent home today. Kevin Blue, CEO of Canada Soccer, says team will not be pulled. He reveals that there was a drone attempt at Copa America, which Jesse Marsh has distanced himself from. And then the latest, John Herdman, TFC coach, denying knowledge from his time, but not really saying the words out loud, which was interesting. One thing is clear, Ben, one smart hire, being Jesse Marsh, does not fix or atone for years of dysfunction, incompetence, corner cutting, and I guess questionable ethics.
Yeah, I mean, not all of that is related, right? Like when we're talking about Canada soccer, we're talking about some ineptitude on the business side of things, which I think is separate from flying drones over some practice.
Sure, but I think there could be some overlap there.
Maybe. To me, there's one piece of connective tissue, and you mentioned that he's denied all wrongdoing, but John Herdman was the head coach of this women's national team with Bev Priestman as one of his assistants. He goes to the men's senior national team. You hear more of the same, and lo and behold, someone that worked underneath him is in charge of a program that does the same thing. Yeah. Listen, it's not good. No, nobody's saying it's good. I do think that people are going a little bit over the top, though, when we're talking about maybe removing Canada from the competition or not allowing them to accrue points in games against New Zealand, which they just barely won but did win. I mean, it's never happened in the history of these things. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick's Patriots were not asked to forfeit any games for spying on other teams. The Houston Astros got to keep their World Series trophy for knowing what pitches were coming. I mean, that's unprecedented stuff if we're talking about actually handing down a punishment that ends up affecting this team's ability to win a medal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the worst result in all of this would be that the athletes get their opportunity taken away, for sure. I mean, that is the thing that I'm most scared about. And I think the thing that with time here has probably become less likely. And I think we've heard it straight up, but it feels like they will avoid that fate, which is a great thing. Them getting on the field against a French team, maybe even losing that game wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because at least, you know, you set things aside for a second. They can get back into the competition. They can move forward. A great thing would be Canada just competing in other events tomorrow, winning medals would be great to take our mind off what is happening.
Celine Dion performing
right
at the opening ceremonies.
Yeah, the take French some of may the, be claiming the, her, but yeah, hopefully, yeah, we got things to talk about
away.
Here. We could take away from what has been a lot of negativity, but I will connect the business to the sport for a second, because, you know, there's the adage in sports, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And we've heard of others being accused of this. We've seen countless examples, maybe not countless, but many examples across different sports. But the one thing that does connect the business, in my opinion, is that business wasn't booming for Canadian soccer. And if all of this is like strategy and tactics and the use and acquisition of information is something everyone is striving for, if you have no money and all you can do is go to your local Best Buy and get the drone, then maybe there's a better chance you are going to be caught red-handed doing things that you shouldn't be. For that reason, maybe there is some connection to how Canada was flailing as an entity, or Canada Soccer flailing as an entity and being the one team in this entire ecosystem that is vast.
Oh, you're
being
saying
the ones getting caught.
Yeah, if they had more money, they wouldn't have gotten caught. They would have done the cheating that the other
possible.
More wealthy countries are
I think
doing.
It's possible.
I mean, maybe. You know what else is interesting is that it didn't take long for people to start throwing everybody overboard, right? Like this report comes out, and you talked about Kevin Blue, and you talk about the CEO of the Canadian Olympic Committee immediately coming to conclusions that this has been happening for a while, and talking about maybe that 2021 gold medal being tarnished. That's surprising that there's no real delay until the conclusion of an investigation by anybody before Bev Priestman is sent packing. And already there's been at least some admission of guilt by some of the people that are in charge and doing some quick interviews of some of the people that would have been in the know in Canada soccer, whether it be with that women's team or the men's national team that have apparently been doing this for years.
I think one other thing that stands out here is how much they want to separate Jesse Marsh from this. Because I mentioned the one hire, it was a great hire. This is something definitely that Canadian men are going to build on or want to build on. And yeah, there was the report or the admission from Kevin Blue that there was a drone attempt at the Copa America, which was brought to Jesse Marsh and promptly dismissed. He was dismissive, is the quote from Kevin Blue, because they don't want any of this to knock the shine off what they've done here and what they have with Jesse Marsh. Immediately separating themselves is a good thing. But when that happens and Jesse Marsh gets that information, and then only a couple weeks later, you try to fly a drone in France, like, where was the connectivity between these two teams, the program working more efficiently? If that happened at Copa America, everybody should have been told, hey, we're not doing the drone thing. And if you're doing the drone thing, and if they know about the drones, then yeah, everyone's complicit in this. And it's not just Bev Priestman and the low-level staffers. If the drone thing came onto their radar, which apparently it did, there is no excuse for it happening in Paris.
I mean, you can go further back than that, right? We talked the other day about the Honduras game in World Cup qualification, where the Honduran team claimed that this was happening. Mm-hmm. John Herdman at the time said, hey, a lot of people fly drones. It's not ours. A lot of drones flying around. How can you prove it's ours? You can't. So it's not ours. So I can only come to a couple of conclusions. One of them is that, okay, we're not going to get caught, they didn't think. And if we do, there's plausible deniability. And even if, you know, we have to admit guilt here, this isn't the worst sin and we're not the only people doing it. But everything you've heard from people who are in that ecosystem, including our next guest, like, there are a lot of people who think this is an egregious breach of the rules.
Do we have our next guest, guys? We're going to have Donovan Bennett a little bit later, 6:30. He'll join us. He's obviously working for us, but also working for CBC. So we'll catch up to him. Maybe we'll talk about how Canada can get over this story and we can move on to better things. But as we wait for Amy Walsh, former Canadian international and soccer analyst for CBC Paris 2024, let's touch on that Blue Jays trade. The Toronto Blue Jays moving Jimmy Garcia to the Seattle Mariners in exchange for outfield prospect Jonathan Clase and a catcher, Jacob Sharp, who was not listed on their top prospects. Jonathan Clase is in about the 10 range, depending on where you look. Someone with speed and power and some experience at the major leagues.
Yeah, it hasn't gone well for him. He was literally just in the major leagues. Like, he was on the Mariners roster when the Blue Jays consummated this trade. He had subsequently been optioned to Buffalo for the Toronto Blue Jays. But he's a guy, he's a big speed threat. 79 stolen bases a season ago in a couple of different levels of the minor leagues, switch hitter. I mean, you can take these prospect rankings with a grain of salt because they matter to you and I because it's all we know. But each organization has obviously their own internal way they evaluate prospects. And just because a guy is 10 on a publicly available list doesn't mean that he's not, you know, top three on somebody else's list. It's all eye of the beholder stuff. But I think what the Blue Jays are trying to accomplish here, it seems clear, in the days preceding the trade deadline next week, is getting controllable offensive players that are ready to play next season. And Class A literally is ready to play right now. He's been optioned to AAA, but I'm sure if he performs with the Bisons, and especially if the Blue Jays do what we expect them to do next week and trade off some of the pieces on the Major League roster, you're going to see him this season. But it is interesting that this Blue Jays team that's doubled and tripled and now quadrupled down on speed guys with, like, a little bit of power. He's not a huge power threat, but a great defender. A guy that can play across the outfield and apparently really good defense in center field. You get what you can get for a pending free agent reliever, but this guy's skill set kind of does fit in with the other Blue Jays outfielders, Dalton Varsho, like a speedy guy, swing and miss, but he can play defense as well.
So you don't have an exact answer to this, but I'll ask the question anyway. The concessions made with 2025 in mind, this is a ready-made prospect that we could see in the next couple weeks, likely, I would assume, before the end of the season, given where the Blue Jays are at right now in the goal to sell off parts. Yeah, the number is the number. The ranking is the ranking. It doesn't mean all that much, and it means something else to different teams with different qualities of prospect systems. But if we're talking about ready-made, ready to go right now, are they making concessions and not going higher on the prospect list because they want someone who is ready quicker than prospect B, C, or D?
It's impossible to know. It would be difficult to stomach if that were the case. Like, hey, they were on the verge of taking a guy who was drafted in the first round last year, but they wanted this guy because he's ready to go next. That would be tough to take, and obviously very short-sighted for a team that sure wants to compete next season, but there's going to have to be major overhauls to this team to see them competing at least roster-wise with the Orioles and the Yankees, and then a Red Sox team that's already better than them and has a huge weekend series against the Yankees coming up where they could all of a sudden be right back into the playoff mix. They're just outside of the wild card race right now. It's hard to know. This guy, coming into the season, like I was reading some of the articles written about him before the season, there were a lot of Mariners people who were excited about his potential. Like, this is not a nobody. And he has an OPS over 800 across his minor league career, has shown the ability to get on base, the occasional home run. And, of course, like I said, the 79 stolen bases and defense across all three outfield positions. But, yeah, if they're sacrificing a higher upside for a more win-now prospect, I would see that as a problem. It's impossible to know, right, what the options were. I will say, as great as Jimmy Garcia is and was as a Blue Jay, he's a pending free agent. He is a reliever. He's not Mariano Rivera. So the idea that you're going to get somebody's top prospect or some guy that was a first-round pick a season ago, probably not realistic. This, among the realistic possibilities, like yesterday you told me this was the trade that was coming down today, I would have said mission accomplished for the Blue Jays.
Sounds about right. It does happen a couple days before the deadline. I'm not sure exactly what that could mean, but it could mean that this was just someone who was high on the priority list. It also might mean that the Mariners just wanted to get things done. And they acquired Randy Arozarena a little bit earlier for two prospects who were ranked lower than Class A for what that is worth. Where does this leave the Mariners? I mean, they can pitch it. Oh, boy, can they pitch. But they can't hit. They've coughed up the division lead to the Houston Astros, who don't look like a team who's going to give it back. Even they get Kyle Tucker coming back before the end of the season. They're a team that's expected to add as they try to go to another championship series this year. They're better, definitely, with these two players, but is this enough offense through Arozarena to get them to a position where they can chase down the Astros or just chase down a playoff spot?
No. Like, they have more work to do, pretty clearly. Julio Rodriguez just went on the IL for them as well. Like, they need offense.
A couple steps back
in a big way. So yeah, this is a step in the right direction. But yeah, this is a team that is on the verge of potentially squandering one of the better pitching seasons in franchise history. And it's never a bad idea to double down on strength, which they've done with the Jimmy Garcia trade. But this is, I mean, of all the seasons that have been seasons where the Mariners could have stepped forward and really asserted themselves as the top dog in that division, where the Astros weren't dominating start to finish during a regular season in which they were making World Series, this felt like it. Like, the Astros got off to that horrible start and have righted the ship, obviously. But the defending World Series champions who we're going to see in Toronto for a weekend series, it took a sweep of the White Sox to get close to 500 again, and that was a team a week ago. You could have seen a bad stretch. They could have been sellers as well. This is a Mariners team with so much talent, especially on the pitching side. Yeah, the people in Seattle would be devastated to see yet another season squandered because they didn't score enough runs.
Yeah, indeed. So I obviously, through the lens of someone who's covering the Toronto Blue Jays on a day-to-day basis, I saw the Arozarena news and I thought, how does this impact the Toronto Blue Jays? And we talked about the idea of hybrid buying with Keegan Matheson earlier in the week. I believe I was with JD Bunkus when we had Keegan on. And yeah, the Blue Jays wanting to be good in 2025, like everything that's going to happen over the next couple of days, I'm going to be thinking about 2025 and whether it makes them more or less viable in 2025. And I thought this Arozarena deal was something that they could have made. Now, they probably wouldn't want to trade Arozarena inside the division, so that probably adds to it. But if you're talking about being good next year, this is the sort of situation that the Blue Jays over the next couple of days could take advantage of, because they are trying to get, they are trying to obtain currency with their expiring contracts. Those that currency is prospects. The Seattle Mariners turned two prospects who were kind of middling, but again, it depends on your situation and the depth of your prospect system, into a guy who can play left field every day, can hit it out of the ballpark, who's not having a great season, but has been a really, really good player at times and maybe has new life in Seattle, may have had new life if he came to Toronto. But they have years of controllability. He's not an unrestricted free agent until 2027. This is a guy who can they can slot into the lineup for a couple years, can help them now, can help them next season. And if you're the Blue Jays and you're thinking about next season, are you willing to cash in some chips that you're going to be acquiring through the departures of Kikuchi, through Jimmy Garcia here, in order to get players that are going to help you next year? Now, you mentioned, when we were talking about it earlier, the premium of having a next couple months that you got to pay for. It's a couple playoff runs. It's one more playoff run for a team that wants to acquire Arozarena now. But I'm looking at that as the soft landing, where you don't have to immediately be something the first steps you take at Rogers Center next spring. You get a couple months to acclimatize yourself. You're part of the team for the next 2 years. They have a bat they wouldn't have been able to find in the offseason, because guess what? They never get these bats in the offseason unless they're paying more than anyone else. Arozarena is going to go to arbitration. They can find a number that works for everyone. This situation is not going to come up again, likely. But if the Blue Jays are going to achieve any sort of hybrid buying this year, this is the situation they could potentially take advantage of, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, it's so there's a couple of different things I want to hit on there. One is, I think if you're somebody parachuting into this front office, this Blue Jays front office from outside of the organization, I don't know if anybody is ever going to evaluate the talent in this roster and the cupboards and say, hey, 2025 is our year, right? So we're talking about a very specific circumstance where this front office obviously taking over at the conclusion of the 2015 season and having almost a decade-long run where they haven't won a playoff game, yeah, feels impetus to win in 2025. I think anybody with fresh eyes on this thing is not feeling the same way about it. But if that's the deal, we got to talk about this team trying to figure it out for one more kick of the can next season. I could see what you're, the scenario you're painting making sense. Now, with Arozarena in particular, maybe there's an in-division tax paid, but the Orioles and Reyes also just consummated a deal, Zach Eflin. Yep. So, like, it can be done, especially you only play 13 times against teams within your division. I know it was pointed out to me a couple of months ago, it was a great point, that, yeah, there's only one playoff spot you're competing against or competing for with the teams in your division. There's three others with the other teams in your league that you're competing for. So, yeah, I think the divisional tax thing might not be a deal. If we're talking about Arozarena in particular, I mean, the season he's having right now, it's helping you because the Blue Jays are one of the worst offensive teams in all of baseball. By the way, so are the Rays. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because Randy Arozarena has not been very good this year. He hasn't been the same guy. He hasn't been the same guy that he was when he was lighting the world on fire in his first couple of months in Major League Baseball. He's got the speed. He's got the power potential. And again, judging by the Blue Jays offensive bar, he's helping, but he's not a huge help. He's not a game changer. And if there's a tax to be paid in division, if there's a tax to be paid because of the extra couple of months you get jumping the gun on the offseason trade market, yeah, there's other solutions to what the Blue Jays are attempting to
do.
What
are those solutions, though? Because honestly,
they need three bats.
They've gone into the last two offseasons at least with grand ambition, right? We're going to make these things happen. We're going to get that player to slot into that position. Hey, we might get Shohei freaking Ohtani this winter. And it hasn't worked out. Like every single time they've went out with a plan, they've ended up executing on plan D or E. Honestly, you go down the list and it's going to take so much to get what they need to be good next year. And maybe that's just a farce, like this idea that 2025 is the goal and they legitimately want to be a great team. Maybe that's just, you know, window dressing. It's not a real thing. But if there is legitimate reason to build and want to be great for 2025 and you show the ambition for it, you're going to have to get a head start on this. You're going to have to do something before you're competing with every other team on free agents or trade acquisitions. And I feel like if they they just let the next 4 or 5 days be lost in vain, they're not going to be able to accomplish what they need to accomplish. And they're going to miss out once again and rely on options and plans that are inferior compared to what others are doing. So I'd like to see them do something, accomplish something more than just sell off their contracts, whether it is sell off with term or bring something in. It's going to get people to the ballpark for the next couple of months and give you some optimism about next season. If it is just moving on from expired assets, I think it's just a death march to next season, which is going to be another failed one.
Well, the Jimmy Garcia trade is an attempt to do that, right? Like, this is a guy that literally today, if you're thinking about penciling in what the Blue Jays starting 26-man roster looks like on opening day next season, Jonathan Glace has to be part of the mix. I mean, Blue Jays are hoping so. Right, he's in the major leagues this season. They just auctioned him to...
It's a big bet.
Sure.
It's not even a big bet. It's a small lottery ticket.
You're trading off a pending free agent reliever, right?
Right.
So, yeah, the expectation that you're going to get an established major league bat in return is probably not realistic, especially when you're trading with a team that needs offense. You're probably not going to get somebody that they think that helps them offensively this season. Mm-hmm. And sure, they would have hoped that Class A was doing that this season, but in 20 games, he wasn't doing it. They can't wait, right? They can't wait. I don't think that the Mariners are giving up on Class A. It's just, hey, it's almost August. They have a division that they want to win. They have a great starting staff that they don't want to squander, and they can't sit around and wait for a month to
see
Class
A figure it
out.
They have what the Blue Jays don't have this season, which is hope for this season.
Yeah, for this season. But yeah, that is kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about hybrid buying. Blue Jays, if you want to do the hybrid buying thing, like you can't have it both ways. You can't talk about, hey, we're looking at future assets that aren't going to impact the roster because they're higher upside guys. And then also this guy that's in the major leagues already this season and can impact your roster in 2025. I think this is as good as you can get if you're dealing with those guys that are pending free agents. But to your point, if you're going to go beyond that, I guess then you can hope on one of those guys in the next tier of prospects.
Sure. But if Garcia is a sought after reliever, which every suggestion is that he was, you wait to the last second, you take the greatest return, and you're trying to flip. You're trying to get something to flip and get yourself to be in a better position for next season. If it's hybrid buying, it includes both selling and buying. And right now it looks like we are just selling off assets that may, with this first trade, be able to bring you something sooner rather than later. That's the only thing we can really glean from the Jimmy Garcia trade to this point. Let's take a break. We're not going to be able to connect with Amy Walsh, but we will connect with Donovan Bennett on the other side, discuss, you know, all the controversy surrounding Canada soccer, but also reasons to be optimistic for Canada at Paris 2024. We will do that after the break. All right, back on the Fan pregame. Could be a sad night. Rogers Center. Yusei Kikuchi's likely final start. It'd be a pretty big failure if it wasn't. Andrew Heaney on the bump for Texas. Start of a 3-game set. It'll be bittersweet to see Yusei Kikuchi for the final time.
Yeah, hopefully he comes forth with a better effort than he has the last couple of starts. Mm-hmm. And probably the reason why he is starting in this game that might be his final as a Blue Jay is they try to raise his draft
stock. So Hayes not the barn on that?
Yeah, I guess not, or else he wouldn't be starting, maybe. But 11 earned runs over his last couple of starts. He hasn't faced a playoff team in 3 starts and won't again, I guess, tonight. But the Rangers are playing a lot better baseball right now, just a game under .500.
Let's bring in someone who recently caught up with Yusei Kikuchi, and that's our Donovan Bennett, who's doing some work for CBC for Paris 2024. Excited for that. Not excited, Donovan, as much about this story that's the preamble to Canada's Olympic bid. the Canadian women's soccer team embroiled in controversy. How is this going to shape this games for Canada? Because, yeah, it's all anyone's talking about other than Celine Dion right now.
Guys, why can't we have nice things is the question.
He mentioned Celine.
I mean, that, yeah, true. We had to wait a while for that nice thing.
I was a little tired by the time Celine came up.
We all were tired. I think we saw more Celine than we did the entire Canadian contingent.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure if where we were in the alphabet, if they need to get off to other countries, if we need to see more, you know, China B-roll. But we saw Canada for maybe like 15 seconds.
They had to share a vote, too.
That is also true. This story sucks. Okay. Like, we didn't have an opening ceremonies. Yeah. Didn't even win a medal. And already we were the story of the games. Story that I'm not sure exactly how to feel about in terms of what's the appropriate consequence. Like, we're talking about it. There's a real cost to the team and the athletes. We're not talking about them, both the women's soccer team, but the entire delegation at large. Nobody has asked me a question about Summer McIntosh in like 72 hours, and she might win a couple medals in 24 to 48. So that part sucks, but also there's a balance of the W5s. Who knew what, when, where did it happen, and ultimately, why did you do it? And if I'm Kevin Blue in Canada Soccer, as much as I'm disappointed that I have to deal with this mess, it's embarrassing. People are saying same old Canada Soccer, even though the leadership of Canada Soccer is different. My biggest problem is, like, you now need to pay a stupid tax for this. Yeah. Like, the potential negligible benefit is not nearly worth the cost. So despite the fact that you got someone arrested and you blatantly cheated, I now question, like, just how wise are you in terms of making decisions leading a federation? So I think Bev Priestman was on the hot seat going in. And yeah. as you love the beautiful game more so than me, so I'm interested in how you feel. But I think now that seat is beyond hot.
She's gone. Oh, like, yeah. What are we talking about here? Like, it's over, right? she's not the head coach of the defending gold medalist. She tried to fall on her sword for a game, and everybody rightly said, well, wait, huh? No, you're gone for the duration of the tournament.
Gone because of PR? Let's just give you a sacrificial lamb? Because Didier Drogba is out here telling our friend Ariel Helwani on the red carpet that, everybody does it.
Meh. Yeah, well, that's it. So I mentioned it off the top of the show. It's, okay, a lot of pointy-headed people talking about throwing Canada out of the games, right? That's a possibility. The New Zealand Football Federation is their want. They played the game.
Sure.
Said, don't give them any points.
Yeah.
And Canada almost did that themselves. But, yeah, okay, Bill Belichick was handed the biggest fine ever to a head coach, $500,000. And the Patriots were fined $250,000. And the Patriots lost a first-round draft pick. But they didn't lose any games.
Banner's still flying.
Nobody. The Houston Astros, as Rob Manfred would say, still get their hunk of metal. Like, nobody's taking that away. So it's bad. And how much other people are doing it, I can't tell you for certain. I bet you there's more than a few that are. And to Justin's earlier point, maybe the amount of money those federations have allows them to use means that aren't so obvious, like Canada was doing. But the idea that it has to go beyond, well, the head coach is going to be fired and maybe some sanctions financially towards this organization. That's what's going to happen. That's what should happen. And none of the players should have to feel any of this, although they will.
Yeah. Considering the previous controversy going into a major tournament was the fact that the federation was suing its own players or threatening to if they striked or walked out because they couldn't come to a collective bargaining agreement, which is not a story now, but it's still kind of not fully done. I don't know if they have the resources at this point to be paying any sanctions.
Yeah.
That's another issue. But the other aspect, you talked about it, and you're right, in terms of those pro sports examples of people who didn't lose games. And there's an aspect, people have said, well, you're not cheating, you're not trying. This is not the NCAA who's like, we're going to take down those Michigan banners because Jalen Rose and Chris Webber got benefits. We saw the Fab Five. Like, we can't unsee how good they were. the IOC will take your medal.
Yeah, well, that's
and they
ridiculous.
Will give it to someone else.
No, but that's bad.
It's bad, but my point is, it is precedent. And would anybody be surprised if little old Canada finally changed the color of the medal, was used as an example for a further deterrent? I'm just saying. Would it be fair? No. But are there examples we know well in this country that Ben Johnson ran in a race where, credibly, 6 to 7 of the other competitors were on something, and yet he lost his medal? We know that all the time, people step an inch out of a lane in a 4x1, they're like, yeah, that didn't happen. So I'm just saying, some people said, well, the players didn't know, and they still had to save those PKs and park the bus, which is what that team often did. But the technical staff is part of the team. In the same way, if a player is doping and that impacts everybody, well, if a member or members, realistically, of the technical staff are cheating, in the same way, doesn't that impact everybody?
You touched on something that's interesting there, that Canada, and this was something I was worried about, that Canada might be an easy country to make an example of, right? Like, we might not have the power and might to fight as hard as the United States, Russia, China, whatever. Like, does that factor in for you, that Canada, you know, preconceived notions, size, ability to fight, that they could take that into account because they want to make a statement with this?
People who think sports, specifically the Olympics, are apolitical, are out to lunch. There is 0% chance that if we were talking about an American controversy and potential sanctions, that the level of conversation in terms of what people thought the real consequences would be the same, because the IOC's biggest partner is another acronym. It's NBC.
Yeah.
All in terms of times of matches, where and when they're played, how long you see different nations in the opening ceremonies, all of this is geared to who are the cash cows. And you mentioned some of the countries. They are either authoritarian countries who are increasingly willing to host these games because they are expensive unless you're using the same resources, and or countries where, from a brand sponsorship rights perspective, they're paying a lot of money. So I'm reticent to say anything about this story because as soon as I do, something else is going to break. I don't think it's going to come to that, but would I be surprised one iota if that's the next push alert that I got?
Yeah.
No.
Well, and we're not doing ourselves any favors either. And I get it. We're an honest people, right? And we take accountability when something happens. But when the Canadian Olympic Committee CEO David Shoemaker says, yes, there now appears to be information that could tarnish the Olympic performance in Tokyo. Okay, like that may be true. Well, you don't have to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Why are you saying that?
You're saying the quiet part out loud.
We haven't done the investigation. There's nobody else has said that. Why do you have to be the first guy to say that? Yeah, like, I could see a world where that's not legit.
Yeah,
they have to take the medal back.
And before these players get back on the pitch, too.
What?
Yeah, Sunday's match will certainly be interesting. And I think the issue is, in these various investigations, whether it's the IOC, the COC, FIFA, speaking of multiple acronyms, these things, you guys know, they take time and do just. And for the integrity of the tournament, like, there isn't time.
No, I know.
Let's assume, for example, the sanction is, fine, New Zealand, you win 1-0. Congrats. Okay. Well, if I'm France, I want to know what the plus minus is moving forward, given the fact that in this tournament, super small, but, you know, two of the best third place finishers get through. It changes everything moving forward, whether you are playing Canada, playing New Zealand, or just another team in the field. So as much as you can't really do an exhaustive investigation quickly, this decision kind of has to be quick for the sanctity of the 2024 Olympic tournament. You could do whatever you want for Tokyo 2020, kind of really in 2021.
Mm-hmm. If we know anything about this Canadian women's team is that they have resolve. They're a team that's overcome a lot of adversity. Everyone doesn't expect anything from them, and yet we've gotten a lot from this program in the last 10, 15, 20 years. But if you're Jesse Fleming right now and you're worried about whether or not your gold medal might be taken away, can you focus on France on Sunday?
a couple things. One, I can't wait for that soundbite to be used in the documentary after this. Right? If we know anything about this Canadian team, they have resolve, right? And then there's montage. Hopefully that documentary is them using that resolve and winning a medal, potentially a gold. I started saying, why can't we have nice things? This would have been the first time where the only thing we were talking about with this national team would have been, what's the setup going to be like without Christine Sinclair? Was the leaders in the room, three at the back, that's new. Maybe that'll get more nice balls in the final third. We're used to talking about the fact that the She Believes Cup, they are not interested in wearing their team-issued gear because they couldn't represent the Federation in good faith. At the World Cup, them talking about the fact that they want equal pay and people talking about the fact that you're not playing well and maybe you should focus on football. Them going on Parliament Hill and saying that the leader of the Federation called out Christine Sinclair and essentially called them all liars. There's always something. If we want to go back farther, we're just talking about sexual harassment and sexual abuse. The fact that they had to, at times, and this is even ridiculous to say in front of a live microphone, were given like used equipment from the men's program as their, like, this is what the conversation has been, and they've just been outliers and be able to overperform that lead up. Not long ago, we were talking about the fact that this team had canceled training camps. They had no lead up in terms of preparation for a World Cup.
So yeah, the drones controversy even in the top three things they've ever had to deal with?
Probably not, to be honest. But the vibes were so much better. They actually played really well in the lead up to these games. We have a domestic league coming next year. The men played well at Copa. The country loves Jesse Marsh. The vibes were so good, and it lasted 2 weeks? No. A pay scale, maybe?
No. Canada soccer's cursed, it seems clear. Like, it didn't take long after they made the World Cup, the men's team did, for the first time in over 30 years before, you know, the head coach was saying thanks but no thanks, and they were going bankrupt and yada, yada, yada. It's just like we cannot have nice things when it comes to Canada soccer.
We're fighting over how many family members could travel over.
Oh, yeah.
It was a mess. And that doesn't even include John Herdman becoming a national story during that tournament, and now life is just a long circle. You know, he's back at the head of this controversy.
So I don't want to excuse cheating. When we, as good Canadians, we should accept when we're wrong.
I feel a butt coming.
Okay,
on.
How many Patriots fans do you know that said, "You know what? You're right. Everything's tainted. I'm sorry," and back down? How many Astros fans do you know that said, "Yeah, you know what? Take the piece of metal back. It's bad. It happened." How about the defending gold medalists on the women's side and the best team in CONCACAF on the men's side say, you know what? We are the bad guy. We're the evil empire. Maybe we shouldn't have cheated, but you know what? We don't need to cheat. We did. We still won the games. And watch us. Going forward, we're going to continue to win because now we're going to be the most squeaky clean country in the world because, God forbid, this ever happens again. Like, we all believe that the Astros aren't banging trash cans anymore, right? Like, this has got to eradicate this forever now.
So this is the final scene in Scarface or Training Day where we just embrace it?
Say hello to the bad guy.
That's right. So here's why I vehemently disagree with you. Because specifically at an Olympics, you mentioned all those teams. Those are teams that, they bring civic pride and whatnot. But you opt into being a Patriots fan or a Astros fan. This is our national team at an international event, and now we are marred in international scandal. And what are the Olympics? And I don't want to be holier than thou. They are an opportunity to sell advertising, right, at its face. But to a certain level, they are about inspiring people to be active, inspiring people based off of the stories and the triumphs of the athletes and what they've gone through to become Olympians. And they are a chance to create some civic pride. After the golden goal, this country was buzzing, right?
Yeah.
There are a few things in life that do that in the way that sports do. And when you can do it for your nation, it's huge. My family, my grandparents are a huge example of people who assimilated. And one of the big ways they did was their passion for the country via sport. What are we competing for? little like pieces of metal on a ribbon. It, ultimately, if we win gold or bronze or silver, that doesn't impact the GDP or the inflation rate. It doesn't actually change people's tangible lives other than the vibes that it brings. So if you need, as the 8th-ranked team in the world, to fly a drone over the 28th and World Cup is 16, Olympics is 12, if it wasn't for the selection process in terms of having a balanced tournament, they wouldn't even been in this tournament. If you needed a drone to get insight on the 28th team in the world, and you're going to risk the reputation of country, and you are funded by taxpayers, yeah, no, like that actually is different than the Astros or the Patriots, where there are a lot of really competitive people in a competitive field who are thinking about their next paycheck, and if they win a championship or have the best offense or defense, they could parlay that into another job. This is different. So yes, as a taxpayer, I'm aggrieved, to use SAT word, that someone thought this was a good idea when representing Canada, by the way, at an international tournament in a country where in the world is the airspace more watched right now than in Paris, France?
Yeah, nowhere.
While setting up and opening ceremonies, unlike any other with more security reasons or security concerns than any other. Yeah, pretty baseless logic there. We got to let you go, Donovan. You got to get down to the CBC because you're going to be on our television soon. And we got to get to Amy Walsh. We're going to connect with her now. Amy Walsh is a former Canadian international and a soccer analyst for CBC. Donovan's counterpart at Paris 2024 Olympic Games primetime panel. Amy, thanks for jumping on with us.
My pleasure.
Okay, so I don't know if you just heard us talking about the scandal, but that's really all we've been talking about is drones and Canada's soccer in a little bit. We want to talk to you about how it will impact or can impact the players because, yeah, now we're talking about 2021 or Tokyo 2020 and the gold medal potentially being tarnished. They have a game on Sunday to prepare for. They have a tournament they're trying and a crown they're trying to defend here at the Olympic Games. It all feels like too much. So how, with your knowledge of this team and these players, will they deal with this issue right now?
Well, I think you saw the way that they navigated that pressure and that outside noise in that performance against New Zealand. I mean, I heard Donovan's comments, you know, like, why would you be so brainless to fly a drone, first of all, at an Olympics where the security is heightened, and think that you need that when you have such belief in your team, right? It just seems counter to everything that this team needs to do as a defending gold medalist. But within that group, technical staff aside, even though now they're being led by Andy Spence, two staff members have already been sent home and I think scapegoated for it. But now it's come out that Bev Priesen was privy to some of that knowledge and she has been suspended. I think you heard in the words of Jesse Fleming and Kaylin Sheridan, the captain and the number one goalkeeper for this team, that there was a real sense of, I hesitate to use the word hatred, but I think like you felt that there was a real disdain and dislike for not only the practice and the decisions made by Bev Priesen, but for the person and the coach, Bev Priesen. I think that you felt that underneath those words. But, you know, much the way that Tejon Buchanan's devastating leg break, I think, galvanized the men's team and their run through Copa. I think that this type of cloud and outside noise and off-field distraction, more than that, a scandal and cheating, will serve to galvanize these players on the inside. So I think that you'll see more of that. You have strong leaders. You have six players for whom it's their third Olympic Games, you know, despite the departures of notable and legends in Christine Sinclair and Erin McLeod and Sophie Schmidt, who have paved the way for these next leaders. And, you know, upstarts like Simi Awuzo and Jade Rose and Kalila Kath with 31 is an exciting player, and it's her first Olympics as well, but can be a real difference maker. So I think they're going to be going into a hostile environment playing the host, but if they can focus on the football, they're able to do that. It's going to be a difficult game. I don't know if you caught any of France-Colombia yesterday, but it was a heck of a match where France dominated for the first 45 and then Colombia roared back into that match. And if it wasn't for a red card to Maya Ramirez from Colombia, then we may have seen that game ended in a 3-3 draw. But they're up against it against France. But I think they know that if they wait until that last group game against Colombia on Wednesday, that they're going to be in tough. So they're going to be looking to get a result again in Saint-Étienne on Sunday against the French.
Yeah, and they got to know that any neutral is going to be rooting against them, considering the controversy that swirls around this team. I mean, just factually, Amy, how much do you think could be gained from having video footage of an opponent's practice, a closed-door practice like Canada may have gotten from New Zealand?
Well, before I get into that, like, it's unimaginable to think of this group and Jesse Fleming, the fresh-faced captain, to be painted as a villain, right? But that's what these players are going to be dealing with. Yep. Like, I think about my 2008 experience as an Olympian, and the cool thing about being there as a footballer is you're under the umbrella of FIFA, but you're also there representing your country and part of that broader Canadian delegation. And there's a real sense and swell of pride doing that, and you start early, so all eyes are on you, and that's part of the reason why this story is as massive as it is. It would have been a big story regardless. But we got to return to that Olympic village, and, you know, we weren't welcomed in as heroes, but we were seen as, you know, we got a result against Argentina. I can still remember seeing the highlights of that projected on Canada House, set to Viva La Vida by Coldplay, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it because they saw it as us sparking something in that group, within that Canadian faction, within that Canadian delegation. And now these players, and they've done nothing wrong themselves by, you know, I don't know if you can say it with 100% certainty, but by all accounts, it was a technical staff that did this. They've not seen anything that's been sourced unethically. They're going to go back in there and be treated perhaps like pariahs. And that's going to be their Olympic experience. And to your question about what can be gleaned by that footage, with everything that is out there, not only for the layperson, but for a professional, nothing. To me, it comes down to a very boring answer. It was unnecessary. It was not only stupid to do because it was illegal. And, you know, to think that no one would see you flying a drone is, you know, the height of foolishness. But it was unnecessary. And because what you're attempting to get is perhaps how the team is setting up tactically, their formation. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about set pieces and penalties and things like that. All of that is out there. You can see so many matches, so many friendlies that these teams play in, like high-level competitions and tournaments or club competitions where you can see players' habits. You can see the way that they strike a penalty, the way that they curl in a set piece, whether it's an in-swinger or an out-swinger. Who are the targets? Are they playing a hybrid system of man-to-man marking, or are they going more zone? All of that can be gleaned via apps, more sophisticated analytics, or through simply scrolling through YouTube. So even if this is rampant in modern football, it still remains that it's cheating. And the baseline is that it was completely unnecessary.
We have 30 seconds for this answer, Amy, because we do have to run. But mm-hmm. 2020 has come under some fire, and there's an admission that, hey, maybe it did help their run to gold last time. And you know, you have Steph LeBay coming out on Twitter and talking about how much she worked on those tactics, just or on the information and her ability to be at her best in that moment. Just how players receive information and tactics and how they go about it themselves. Like, how do those two things intertwined? We got to go in 60 seconds.
Okay. Well, when you're a player and you're in that environment, it's very siloed. As a player, you're focused solely on your own performance and how you control that. And you put blind trust in your technical staff, that everybody in the way that they've divided everything, how it's been delegated, that they're doing their due diligence, they're doing everything to the best of their abilities, and they're bringing it back to you. At no point would I ever even consider asking, did you source this information, this data, this footage in an ethical and sporting manner? Because that is just assumed. So, and then Steph Labbe and all those players who got that gold in Tokyo, they still had to go out there and perform and execute. That's what it comes down to.
Thanks, Amy. We appreciate you jumping on. And we'll be watching Canada this weekend. That was Amy Walsh. This was Ben Ennis. This was The Fan pregame. It was a lot of fun this week. And we'll catch you next week with Ailish back.